We're going to go ahead and get started. It is 3:06 p.m. on Wednesday, April 12th, 2023. I will call this meeting of the Duval County Election Advisory Panel to order. First item on our agenda is our roll call. So, Mr. Pringle, we can start with you.
Greg Pringle, EAP.
Ingrid Montgomery, EAP.
Austin Quickle, EAP.
Robert Maldonado, EAP.
Robert Phillips, Supervisor of Elections Office.
Mike Hogan, Supervisor of Elections.
Jeff Clements, Council Research.
Thank you. We are waiting on one member, Mr. Henry. So I'm wondering if we could skip the second item on the agenda, because that's going to require us voting. So maybe we can move that down to... after the Supervisor of Elections update. Just, I know you guys are busy and want to get you going. So with that, we'll turn it over to Mr. Phillips and Mr. Hogan. I know on the agenda we have an update on the March 2023 city election and the upcoming May election, as well as a few legislative matters and the withdrawal from the ERIC system. So Mr. Phillips, Mr. Hogan.
Go ahead.
To give you a brief update, coming off of the the March election, the turnout was just under 30%. For a while there, we were wondering if we would even get close to that, but there was a robust election day turnout. Vote by mail turnout was down compared to the last comparative election, whereas the early voting was pretty much exactly on track from what it was before. Everything went very well. We didn't have any poll worker shortages or machine failures anywhere. And we're currently preparing for the upcoming election. There will be three countywide races on this. Of course, everybody knows mayor, and then we also have property appraiser and city council at large, group five. There are six city council races that still have to be decided in the upcoming May election. Vote by mail ballots dropped last week right at 49,000. So far we've gotten about 1,500 back, so that's encouraging. Early voting will begin May 1st at 19 sites, 10 to 6, running through the Sunday prior to the election. We're also currently, we have ongoing poll worker training classes right now. Currently we're training probably 100 to 120 poll workers a day, and we don't anticipate to have, now this is a really compressed time period because of the quick turnaround between the two elections. But we are required by law to bring them through training again. And that's pretty much it. May 1st.
All right. With that, we'll open it up to any questions, comments. I know Mr. Henry usually leads our discussion.
Yeah.
So on turnout, I know Supervisor Hogan, you kind of expressed some concerns prior to Election Day just on the lack of turnout. Historically, how does that line up with a spring mayoral or citywide election, 30%?
Well, it's not just an example cannot be just drawn from ours. I'm looking around the state, and around the state it's the same thing. Mm-hmm. They're just not... turning out the votes like they did in the past. A lot of that, I believe, is baby boomers have been running demographics for a long time. They vote, but the younger ones don't. And I remember when I turned 18, that's the first thing I wanted to do was register and vote. I'm not so sure that the young folks are doing that. This election was a little bit different from our previous ones from the standpoint that there weren't too many people on the ballot that the people in Duval County knew. I think they were trying to find out information about these folks and couldn't, although Google's a real great. It wasn't around a few years ago. But so I think that was one of the main reasons. The negative campaigning, but it's all over. And I look back, I can't remember a campaign that didn't have negative campaigning. Probably back into the 1700s, they were lying back then about their opponents. But yes, it's disturbing to me because I think we had 24.93% turnout, and that means that one out of four voters that was eligible voted. That just bothers me as an American. Makes me want to be like Argentina and Australia. They fine you if you don't vote. Not fined, but fine. But that is not on the back of the supervisors of elections.
Sure.
Turnout is who are the candidates, what positions are open, and if there are amendments, what are the issues. You would be amazed at how much money we spend on alerting the voters to vote. And we have press releases all the way through the process. We send out everybody a sample ballot, and on that sample ballot is the information about where the early voting sites are, what their times are, and it also gives them directions to their precinct. Every single voter gets that in every single election, 10 days to 2 weeks before we start early voting. Someone was asking me, you know, what else can you do? And I don't think there's anything else we can do, because I believe you'd have to be a rock on the moon not to know that there was an election in March in Duval County. There wasn't a roadway, probably. It didn't have a sign. So it is just the apathy of the voter. And whether it's because of negative campaigning, whether or not they trust the results anyway, I'm not sure what's keeping them away from the polls. Just a culture thing.
One of the things that I'm just wondering, and you made a key statement there about nobody knew there, and a matter of fact, I met some of the candidates after the election was over with, because I didn't know them from anybody else that could walk down the street. Is there something or any way that could put these elections and rearrange them to where, like, the governor or the president's race, or maybe make it there's less times to vote, because you gotta vote for the city council and the mayor, then you vote for this, and then you have another election. Is there any way to congregate these?
I think that just about everybody that's ever worked in an elections office would like to see the city elections either in the gubernatorial cycle or the presidential cycle.
Right.
There's a lot of people that are going to be voting. That might actually increase those particular elections. I know that it's going to save about $3 million if we did that. But the guys and gals that make the rules don't want to move that, because it's going to be more difficult to get campaign money when there are so many candidates on the ballot. And so I think there's some self-preservation going on a little bit. But if I was governor for a day and could make a decision that would impact the municipals, everybody votes. And this is an off-season. There's nobody else except some special elections in some real small towns. We're the only countywide district that's holding an election.
Yeah, and it's just kind of mind-boggling. And in the past, I've lived here since 1980, and it just seems like that the first one is maybe up to 30%, and then the next one is like 18 or 19%, or just if you're lucky. So it's having to have 50 plus one, maybe you could change it to whoever wins it. It would save
without
a lot of money.
Yeah, without a runoff.
Yes.
Do that in the closed primaries. Mm-hmm. That's another thing. Florida is only one of 14 states that holds closed primaries. Duval, as far as I know, is the only county, and I believe city, that has unitary elections. Growth, I looked at that. I was going to give you a little backstory. When I came, we had 545,000 voters. We now have 658,000 voters. That's a 21% increase in 8 years. A lot of those people are coming from states that don't have closed primaries. And obviously, there's probably no one that comes from unitary. And so we have really two different cycles, totally different rules. I got a lot of questions about why did we list the sheriff's race? And we didn't. It was a municipal race, therefore we listed alphabetically. And everything else on the ballot that wasn't a special election was the governor's party. So whoever the governor is, whatever party they're a member of, that's how we have to set up the ballot. So the Republican was set first and the Democrat set second. So people were thinking we were doing something to fool them because we didn't have the same listing all the way down the page. And Robert can tell you, we had a lot of problems with mail ballots because what they did is they started circling everyone at the top, and then they got down there and said, oh, I didn't want to, vote for that person. And so then we have to remake that ballot because they're now trying to show us that they want this other person. We do a lot of things to confuse the voting public.
So regarding turnout, are these kind of efforts that your office is making, is this something that you see continuing into the future? I know.
We're going to continue to do everything that we've been doing in the past. I've got a list. I didn't bring that with me, but I think there's six different press releases. There's a press release for when the books close, when the ballots go out, when the sample ballots go out, when we have the logistics and accuracy test, closing the books,
early voting dates
and times. We sent everybody a sample ballot, as I mentioned. Joined in with the Jumbo Shrimp, the Lightning, and the Iceman. And now with the Jaguars. And we're reaching almost a million people through those three organizations. If you go to a game, you're going to see something on the scoreboard. You're going to see about voting. They even take our press releases pretty much and show it's the same thing, books close next week or whatever. So, again, it's not because we're not notifying them. They're notified. And the biggest notification is a sign on every street. So the people knew when to vote. They just don't come.
Well, how was the what impact did the express vote have? Did many people use it, and how effective was that?
More and more people have been using it. I was real surprised how quickly they acclimated to it. There were two problems that were not with the equipment, but with the name, express vote. And so a lot of folks think that marker, my IT director calls it electronic pencil, is actually a tabulator. And so they don't want to use it. But it's not a tabulator, and it's touchscreen. If you remember the brouhaha a few years back about touchscreen,
And so there are those. There is a group out there that just is not going to use the express vote. But the people that do use it love it. And it's efficient. It is much less in cost. Paper ballots, 25 cents. That's about, for that little thermal paper, maybe 1 cent. We have to have printers there. We don't have to have a printer. Tabulate just as easy on the DS-200 as a regular ballot. But there's that group out there that is a little bit fearful about elections and think there's a conspiracy somewhere here.
I had heard in one of the meetings I'd been to 2 or 3 weeks ago, after the election, but about some of the poll places that some of the poll workers were trying, it was forcing them to use the express, and they wanted to, they didn't like it. That's what I heard. They didn't like anybody pushing them into it.
Yeah, I've heard that. Now, I know the training, we encourage our folks to whatever they want, okay? It's not, don't push it. We ask that they offer it first, but we have a regular on-demand ballot printer on site, and if that's what they want, that's what they'll get. Now, probably not until after the next year, with the presidential election, we'll probably still put that choice out. But I think after that, we're going to have to get rid of the printers and everything, and you just have to use the express vote. This is the fourth or third time. Coming up on the fourth time.
Coming up on the fourth.
Each time,
the use gets up.
Increases, excuse me.
Mr. Henry?
Do you have any other questions?
I do, but...
No.
I just wanted to touch briefly on poll workers. I know you said that sounds like numbers are robust and training is ongoing. So could you just provide a little more detail on numbers and outreach efforts and any trends that you might see as far as those workers go?
While you're looking that up, we just joined in with a veterans group nationwide and to use veterans for poll workers. We've already sent out the letters to the ones that they identified in Duval County, and I know one is already coming to training. So, but we really need parity in every single precinct, and our biggest problem is not Democrats. We have 63% of our poll workers are Democrats, and so to get parity is very difficult. That's where we need help. So NPAs, Libertarians, any other party, Republicans, we're having trouble in that area.
So right now we're projecting that we would need 1,730 poll workers for the upcoming May election. That includes reserves, people that we want to have extra that we don't need but that we want trained that will be ready to deploy if we need. So far we have trained about 700 and we have another 1,000 enrolled. Have 16 what we call techs that have signed up to take a new manager's class, which means they're stepping up to become a manager. And let's see, and 23 of the ITs that have actually served in that position before that have signed up to take the experience manager's class. So even if you just look at the raw numbers, looks like we might be short by about 10 managers. We should have more than enough. And again, this is still, training's only been going on for like 2 weeks. So those numbers will just continue to go
Do you happen to have any demographic statistics handy? I know you've provided those in the past.
I can crunch that. I don't have it with me.
No worries.
If not. Was actually something that I was going to start looking at anyway. But that's something that I can, as far as you mean, like Republican, Democrat, and then age.
I think we've done age. I want to say gender, race as well.
I can put that together and email it to Jeff.
Yeah, that'd be great. Mr. Henry? Questions?
Yes.
How are you doing this? Sorry. Great. Daniel, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. Apologies for being late. Quick question. On some of the proposals that I think I forgot the bill designation, but was dropped in the Senate for elections changes, primarily around the state pulling out of ERIC and then the additional training that the Secretary of State's going to require of SOE staff to be trained on how to do signature verifications for VBM ballots. Have you guys kind of thought how that's going to affect Duval yet at all, or is it still too soon to tell?
Well, the verification is, that was a couple of years ago. We had to go to training for signature verification. We were already doing that. We always had a class, usually last about 4 hours, and now that's required for everyone. I'm not following anything. I'm leaving in June 30th. I don't need to know about any other new laws. I will not be implementing any of them. And I'm on the legislative committee, so I will make calls to whoever my colleagues tell me I need to attack. But I'm not real familiar with the legislation right now.
Okay. That inspires the next question. For the transition with, Supervisor-elect Holland, Robert has been very helpful to kind of talk about some of the things that he's already kind of asking and kind of putting together for when he gets sworn in July. Can you kind of talk about, from your perspective, supervisor to supervisor, how that transition is kind of going?
Ready to leave. I mean, I'm packing up. I mean, we had to stop some things that we couldn't finish. We wanted to bring all of our people into one facility, and with the special elections that hit us in the time where thought we'd have all the time in the world to get everything done, that hurt us. And so we just had to abandon that idea. And I called Jerry and I said, look, and he agrees that we should be consolidated. He understands that it's easier to manage and it's more secure. Same thing that I believe he's going to want to do is, if it is outside of downtown, to have a presence here, you know, for people to register or whatever. But more as time goes on, fewer and fewer people come to our office. They can do everything online. So that really the only thing as it relates to the changing of the guard that I'm involved in right now. So we pulled away from everything. He's going to have to get next year. He's going to have to give notice to our current landlord that we're either going to stay or move. So, but Jerry actually was the supervisor when we went to this place.
I remember, yeah.
He'll step in.
Do you guys, part of that lease renewal, have we already exhausted all the renewals available in the current lease?
Oh.
Okay.
We have some 2 years, 5 years. I think 1.5 and 2.2s. But that's not consolidating. That would be the same as we are.
Okay. One thing I saw, Nassau, the new supervisor, Atkins, I always forget the T, has been doing a lot since she's been sworn in to try to build up, like, voter education stuff. Probably not best directed to you, but say it on the record anyway. Some of the cool things that I've liked that she's done so far is create a mobile app for people to be able to download on their phone that has real-time information about early voting sites, signing up for vote by mail, polling locations, basically a mini version of her website that people are able to kind of like data on their phones. And obviously with the new way that kind of technology has kind of been going, people are becoming more likely to either look at social media or like go on mobile apps to be able to kind of get information as opposed to like going to the SOE website. And I know the SOE website has probably been the same since I graduated high school. And I was like, in 2010, it hasn't really changed that much. Yes, I'm young. So I was just curious to see if you've kind of made notice of that at all, since she's our neighbor to the north.
She has 16 precincts. We have 199.
Yeah.
So they have a lot of time on their hands. When we finish the election in May, we will have pulled off 6 elections in less than 18 months. That is unheard of. There's not any other supervisor in the state of Florida that's ever experienced that. And we had 2 redistrictings in 1 year, and that has never happened anywhere else in Florida. And that is a major pain in the neck. And I'm glad I had this rascal there.
Through surgery,
so
too.
So we have not been able to do anything but do elections. And so it is good that Jerry is coming in, because there should be some type of a transition, but we've had to just stay in line and do these elections and make sure it's right. And so I will be happy on June 30th.
I tell you.
I can add one little comment to that.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that app was written by someone in-house. It's not like something that a vendor provided, because there's another supervisor in one of the southern counties that kind of did the same thing. And like Mike said, the people that we have that have that capability have been spending all their time on the eVids and the DS200s and the testing and the prepping and the printing. We have basically 3 tech people on staff, but we've also added now 500. Yeah, but we've added 500 more pieces of tech to the inventory in the last 2 years.
500.
So that's still the same number of guys that are still maintaining, you know, a lot more equipment. So
it's getting more and more difficult. Numbers going up as far as number of voters, all the new laws that have been coming out. I think after 2002, there was only one big package. In fact, I was involved in that. And just little tweets and tuning. But now in the last 3 years, it's been major. Out. The way that they required us to implement it was not fair to the voter or to the supervisor's offices. The law should have been impacted or released before you actually implemented it in the field in the elections, and we didn't have that opportunity. Just with the mail ballots, for instance. 99,000 notices to people that they had to re-up because their request had expired. And I wish we had a little more time than that. We did that in January, and we had an election in March. So, they don't listen sometimes to our suggestions.
Yeah, I know. And I know the association was really loud about that during the time, too. So it wasn't for the lack of educating the legislature about the potential harms. All right, I'll finish it off. So I know Robert had said that you guys like to order the VBM ballot envelopes ahead of time because you want to make sure you have enough inventory and that there's no delays and potential with potential vendors in the future. Do you know when you're going to be making the VBM ballot envelope order before the November election next year?
We have, with our last order, we made sure we had enough to go through on hand for any of the upcoming elections.
Wow.
So we're not placing any more inventory orders. So in other words, we have plenty of VBM stock on hand for the May election.
Mm-hmm.
We won't be placing any more orders until after July 1. So in case there is another talked about it and tabled it, if they were to go back to it, we're not going to have a significant inventory left over that we're going to have to redesign and then recreate, because we knew a transition was coming. If Mr. Hogan had another term, we probably would have went ahead and ordered enough to get through at least March. But since we're going to have to order new, we're going to have to order new voter information cards, we're going to have to order new vote by mail envelopes.
The reason why I mentioned that, not to use her again, but in Nassau during the 2020 election, during the 2022 election, she included a box that the voter was able to check if they wanted to renew their vote by mail request for the next year, and she just didn't process them until January 1st, so that way it would stay compliant with SB 90. And I think that would be a great way to kind of like reduce the surprise that people may have every 2 years when their requests expire, so that way they're able to kind of like check the box along with them turning in their ballot to kind of reduce that amount of information that you have to push out every 2 years.
We try to use best practices. There are some differences in the supervisors. We have a little bit of latitude. We're only one of two counties, and they copied us that we cover up the signature. So that's a process. You have to take that flap off when it gets there. Where's the check? Can you scan it and identify and goes automatically to our records, or is it going to have to be done by hand? I don't know any of those things about checking a box. I've heard about it, but I don't know how they process them.
I think the way that she did it is like it's right under the signature, where you kind of put your information about your email address and your phone number. She has a little disclaimer that says, would you like to?
Right, but how do you get that into the record?
That I don't know. I don't know how she processes it.
So then you'd have 100,000 ballots that you'd have to look at, okay, this one, and then look up that person and say yes. Or is it automated? Now, I don't know how they would automate it, but
could the big machine?
Some counties have put it on their voter information card to return to. There's different ways that different ones are. Because again, it's a new problem that all of the supervisors just had to start dealing with last year.
Yeah.
So there's different ways that different ones are attacking it. And like you said, if they get in the habit of reordering them every election, the law might change again to back, because just since I've been at the supervisor's office,
it's gone back and forth. Mm-hmm.
So.
One last question. For the budget that's about to be presented by whoever the next mayor is in July, I know the current administration obviously has to start working on the framework. So you're in that weird space where you have a piece of it, but also Supervisor Holland may have a piece of it at the tail end as well. Based on what you've been talking about in terms of the amount of elections that you're kind of having to go through every 4 years and the frequency of it, do you guys ever consider increasing the headcount number that you have as a request to see if you'd be willing to – if the administration would be willing to give you more staff to kind of deal with the...
We do that all the time. I will say that this administration, I can compare it to my 8 years as tax collector, has been much more generous. Now, I think the position itself is what's caused it, because they don't want to be embarrassed. I mean, you get in, you make mistakes, and then you're on the news forever all across the United States. And so they have, anytime we've asked for products, services, people, salaries, I just got some salary increases in NBRC yesterday, or day before yesterday. And they've been, like I said, they've been generous to us. I don't think we've ever been underfunded. But I also, when I got there, I realized we had too many people. Saved a little money for the taxpayers. And so when this 20% started hitting me, I went back to them and I said, all you're doing is putting me back to where I was in 2015. And they said, yeah, you're right. So been very pleased with this mayor's actions as it relates to.
I would say normally they're pretty stingy about, every mayor's office is always stingy about full-time positions with benefits, but we were able to get those two back because they were too weak to get them. If they had been brand new, I don't know if they would have been. So.
I use a lot of part-time.
Much more than you had in the
past. And you say the benefits cost is about 35% on the dollar, and we get great workers. Working and retired, and now they're back and working 24 hours, you know, a week.
Good Lord. Works for everybody.
Everybody's happy. Mm-hmm. I got four of mine that retired back.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
If I can.
Yeah.
Kind of touching on the taxpayers saving the money, what, on average, how much a year spent on voter outreach? Tell them when the elections are going to be, about how much a year goes towards that, either directly or indirectly.
The biggest ticket item is sample ballots. That goes out to every individual voter. That's generally anywhere between $75,000 and $100,000. Because if you have that varies between elections. And the funding of it varies, because for the August elections, those are primary elections. So just as an example, I have in my own house, I have myself, my wife, and four children. Mm-hmm. And if two of them are nonpartisan and one of them's a Democrat and one of them's a Republican, then that's five or six different ballots going directly to that one home. For the general election, sometimes try to save a little money and just do what we call a household, where we'll send one ballot just to that household, and that's when you'll see the cost go down a little bit, because then instead of mailing 665,000, we're mailing about 400,000.
Okay.
We do that for the city elections in the March and the May elections for two reasons. Number one, because they are unitary, so it doesn't matter what your party is, you all get to vote on the same thing. And number two, the city elections are not covered when we receive voter education money grants. If we receive any money from the state, that is a grant for voter education. Traditionally, that's what we use to pay our sample ballot. But that's a big ticket item that every 4 years I have to ask the budget office to fund that, because it can't be paid for with grant funds, because August election, you always have a congressional race on there, so it's a federal election, and then the same for November. The rest, we try to take advantage of as much free social media as we can. We do spend, just this week, we spent about $6,000 on radio ads, broadcast. The way it works now, you'll go with, like, iHeart, which is, you know, back in the day, we would buy time with each individual station. Now you just tell them we want to spread this across every demographic. We don't want to just, you know, put all of our money on one radio station. So we'll pay them about $5,000 or $6,000 for a 2-week cycle. Was it 15-second ads? We get some 15-second ads, some 30-second ads, and we do that like he was mentioning with the Icemen and the shrimp, the sharks and the jaguars. The Jaguars did it last year on their own dime because it was part of an NFL
initiative. Yeah.
But with the smaller minor league teams, we'll pay a little bit. We'll pay $2,000 or $3,000 to get them to do like a voter registration night or something like
okay.
that. So we have about, I'd say, probably about $10,000 to $12,000 annually that goes to outreach, just specifically like that. But again, the big ticket item is the sample ballot.
Okay, and that's like I said, a lot of time covered either by grant or.
Yeah, except 2 years ago, 2020, the state said they were the money that came out of HAVA that came out of the 2000 election has dried up. They're not going to be issuing any more. Now, since then, they have issued a couple grants, but they've been focused more on cybersecurity and things like that. They're not as before they were driven on voter education. So
gotcha.
Now they're more towards security and things like
that. Because I share the sentiment with you guys. I don't know what else can be done to get voter turnout out. I mean, even in my own office, people around my age was probably 1 out of 10 ended up voting in this last one. And it's just, quality over quantity. I kind of look at it that way. These people want to educate themselves and make the time. That's my personal opinion, not
that is one thing I tell the poll workers when we're doing training for these elections is that you will notice that for the president, what did we have for the governor's turnout? Was it about 60%?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We had 60% turnout, but we had 1,100 provisionals in early voting and almost that same number just on election day. For the March election, even though we had only about a 30% turnout, the provisionals went down to like 27 and 40 because the people that actually do show up in these elections actually do know where they're people that are dialed in. If you're going to vote in the city elections, you know what's going on.
Yep.
You're paying attention.
Yep.
So the election process for us with the workers goes a lot smoother. They're not dealing with as many people that just, today's election day, it's 6:30, I'm just going to pull into the first place I see and hope that they're going to let me vote.
Okay, thank you.
Hey, Mr. Pringle.
Do you do the social media, Twitter, Facebook,
YouTube? Yeah.
What we've actually found on that is it's generally the same 2 or 3 dozen people that like every post, that repost, that retweet. It's better, like if Channel 4 makes a post, that's going to reach more people than if we just do a post, because with our social media, it's the same people that it's the same people every time. We're reaching the same audience.
Do you do texting?
No, we don't do that.
I mean, you could do a text blast. It's still.
Yeah, we have not looked at that. There are some vendors that
found that works good for a lot of things.
Campaigns are starting to use that.
I think I got 4 or 5, not from the city or anyone. So I think guys are covering it for you guys on that.
About personal, you can get
it's a new. It's an expanding.
Wait, don't you guys already use the texting service for VBM cures?
Yeah, but he's talking about. Reminder.
I get that, but it sounded like as if like you'd be starting from scratch since you already have.
Well, it's two completely different.
That's a program.
Yeah, it's two completely
all in and of itself
issues. Yeah,
it's tied in with the records. Now, one of the things that I wish more people would do, and that is you can get your sample ballot by email, and we have a lot that we send those out to, and of course that saves us mail.
Yeah, I didn't realize that.
It's up quicker.
I'd a whole lot rather have the email than I had the mail.
Yeah.
One suggestion, well, from the three millennials that are at the table, sorry not to speak for you, Austin. A lot of times the content that you create has a big impact in the engagement that you receive on social media. So, like, even if you look at what the city does in terms of content creation for the mayor's office, or what other supervisors do, like Orange or Seminole or Hillsboro, I don't know whether or not they have someone that's dedicated to that specific purpose, or they just have some young people on their staff that's able to kind of create the content. But it looks like they spend a considerable amount of time of kind of like curating pictures and content and videos to try to boost up the engagement they receive on their post. Because if you're just kind of posting statements and like words, that's not going to really get people's attention.
Yeah, Pac-Man says go vote.
And I think that may be the reason why some like a News for Jax or Action News or First Coast News, granted that's their business, but get more engagement on the post like you mentioned, because they're presenting in a such a way that will be enticing for the viewer to respond to. Dopamine level will start to go up.
Because if they looked at the wonderful video of Express Vote with what's the name?
Greg.
That those videos have been marvelous. Everybody should see them. Just go on the website. The website's been wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And we can call you anytime.
So I'm going to move on just briefly. I know we touched on SB 7050, and I believe it went through committee this week. So maybe we can revisit this when the office has a little more information on it and when it's implemented.
Mm-hmm.
And Jeff's done a good job of printing this article from the Daytona Beach News Journal that kind of summarizes the big points. It's included with the materials this afternoon. And it looks like some of it's at the state level. Some of it may affect SOEs. So, like I said, this is something we can discuss maybe at a future meeting, maybe at our August meeting, once this is finalized and implemented. But I did want to talk about the withdrawal from ERIC. For folks who aren't aware of that, I was hoping your office could explain kind of what ERIC is, what its purpose is, and kind of the recent action to withdraw from that.
Well, ERIC has been around for a long time, but not in Florida. Governor Scott was approached with it, and he like it. And it was not until DeSantis, and I think he had to be convinced that he actually allowed us to join. And it sounds great. Its purpose is very good and sound, but implementation is a little bit different. First of all, they were more focused on reaching out to sign up people to vote. And what we were looking for is, how do we get our records correct? How do we know that Austin's not also voting in Georgia? And so that was the thing that really locked all of us together. It's going to help us purify and our records.
And if I may, for those on the board who aren't aware, ERIC stands for Electronic Registration Information Center. And the idea is that secretaries of state from different states join into this collective in order to compare and contrast voter registration rolls to ensure accuracy and help prevent, you know, things like double registration or misregistration or things like that. So in theory, that sounds like a great idea, but you were saying that, you know.
The work, when it came, was right in the presidential election. and it's a lot of, it takes a lot of staff time. And so the beginnings of using it were very difficult. It is not a government-owned organization. It is, as you said, just for states. There's 32 states, but now I think there's 27, because Florida was not the only one to back it. And it had to do with some concerns about the data sharing and some of the activities of the founders. And so Alabama stepped out. I think Ohio came out. Florida. And then I can't remember the other few. So we were just getting into the area where we were going to be sharing. And the other problem is not all states were in it. So, and it were the big states that we were missing. And where I found double votes are in New York and New Jersey, and they're not in it. California is not in it. So if it had been nationwide, it would have been much more of a tool. But I think overall the supervisors of the state of Florida would rather have it than not have it. But
and is that a legislative matter, or is that something the governor can join and the secretary can join unilaterally? I'm not quite sure procedurally how
they
that
could,
works.
They could override anything that he would not take up, whatever.
I don't believe it was a legislative vote. I believe it was an executive.
That's okay.
That seems like that if it ever got hacked, which it seems like everything gets hacked, that could be a two-edged sword for everything. It scares me. I mean, people have a lot of problems voting. I know my wife, she just has a duck. We, well, you make sure, well, I'm going to carry it down. And, oh, my goodness. But anyway, that's how people perceive it. And it's honest. It, you know, people have their rights as American, but it is anything extra just brings, to me, seems like it brings on more questions. Bother me, and it bothers most so folks. I'm not a millennial.
Eric is new to me. Were voters, I mean, is it like implied consent? Do they just know that this information is being shared? Because I never knew that any of this was ever going on behind the scenes. Did I miss something? Fine print.
I don't think voters would notify.
You register to vote as a public record.
It's public record.
Which is why you get those lovely mailers and text messages.
A lot of people that write us and say, I'm through. I'm not going to vote anymore. Take me off the rolls. And it's because they're getting all these calls. And I really hate that. I was debating them very politely, but I never won, so I just gave up. Okay, we'll take you off the roll. This is what you got to send me.
All right, do we have any other questions or comments for the Supervisor of Elections?
Is there one thing that I think you're the most, since this is really your last time with us, is there one thing that you're trying to get accomplished before June 30th is like your swan song kind of thing?
That's a good question.
No. I wish that I consolidated the office. I really didn't have any luck with the administration the first 4 years. And then all of a sudden, things changed, and they came to me and said, go ahead with your idea. And elections, and it stopped everything in the grant.
And COVID.
You can't be moving when you're doing an election. Yeah. And the other thing would be, and I didn't really challenge it because I know every time I've, this goes way back when I was on the city council, just that pushback. I would like to see us move the cycle of our elections. And maybe there would be a citizen petition to.
At the very least, if they don't want to do it in the midterm or presidential cycle, they at least could push it to November, August and November. During why? That's worse? Oh, never mind.
Which one?
To move it to August and November in odd years.
Oh, yeah. Same thing.
There, it's
because it's so close to the. What the president? Okay.
You need usually some time to rest your equipment, your people, and get everything right. And we've not had that for 18 months.
Well, you would theoretically get that between the midterm and that election, though.
Theoretically, but
swapping them instead of
it.
with this upcoming election, how long does it take? I mean, just hours. How many hours? How many hours will it take to prepare for this coming election?
I don't think we've ever measured that. You might have.
You have to take into consideration. Call center a week before early voting begins, and 2 weeks before early voting begins, and we bring in the warehouse crew generally 2 months before early voting begins because they have to prep all of the non-essential or non-tech, non-electronic tech equipment. Up into several thousand, and that's not even considering the IT guys, the man hours they do, and then the man hours for vote by mail, and then the man hours for training. Every training class is like 3 hours long, and we have several trainers that are doing, you know, multiple classes per week. So yeah, there's a lot of man hours that go into preparation for each election. And I will say, as far as the scale is, you just would not believe it. You'd almost have to talk to other supervisors because, again, using Nassau County, we have council districts bigger than their entire county, but then we're like right in the middle. Then you go down to Miami-Dade, and they have to do twice as much for vote by mail as we do. They have, whereas all the machines that we have, they have two. Have entire departments dedicated, and that's when you get into that. You have some counties that are large enough, they have entire departments devoted just to vote by mail, entire departments devoted just to social media, things like that. You know,
in the way it's going to be that way.
Miami has 8,000 poll workers, we have 2,000. They have 880 precincts, that's more than the state of Connecticut. They have five languages.
My goodness.
I bow to Christina every time I see her. I don't know how she does it. And they also have to do a lot of cities. We're consolidated. We did have, when I first got here, Atlantic Beach. They finally rolled into the cycle. And but she's got probably 20, 23 cities that she has to do as well. So I'm... The good thing that she has that I wish we could get, and this is something we've never talked about, I don't believe, and that is, especially if we did this in the gubernatorial or presidential year, they use schools for their precincts. love to be able to go in the schools, to foreign precincts. Our libraries were never built for early voting. Some of them are just too small. We had to leave one, Murray Hill, because in 2020, they had a room, the line wrapped it twice almost. And so she has a great system, but she also has facilities that I wish we had.
That's a good idea.
She's in that weird space because, what is it, next year they have to actually elect a supervisor for the first time?
What's that?
Yeah.
Yes. Well, she was elected, I think.
Oh, okay, cool. Okay.
She was appointed before that. But they have, the way they do that, like Mr. Hogan said, they have so many cities and municipalities, they have election teams. So, like, you'll have one team is always working. You'll never go down there. They don't have some team working on an election. And it, but it rotates. It's not the same people every time. So.
My goodness. Nobody knows anybody.
Every single county has a problem with poll workers.
All right. There's nothing else. Thank you both for your attendance and for your hard work. We really do appreciate it. And I think hopefully, I was thinking moving forward, we can continue the meeting at the SOE's office, perhaps when we get a full board membership, and you guys are a little less busy. I know that was
last two meetings. I wasn't.
You're on the phone.
So moving on with the agenda, I'm going to go back to yes.
Can I just toss one thing in here?
Yeah, absolutely.
Which you'll probably get to later, but I was just going to tell Mr. Hogan that Mr. Pringle's term's expiring next week.
Thank you. Yeah.
And he's eligible to be reappointed, so if you'd like us to do that, we can make that happen.
Okay.
And is that the only SOE seat, or are there two? I just looked at the list today, and I can't remember.
I think he'd like resigned around COVID time.
Ray, the only one that
Charles White is your other.
Is he still in office?
No, we
yeah, and I believe that's yeah, that's yeah. So yeah, that we have had some membership issues recently, just with vacant seats and folks serving on expired terms, and I believe I'm. My term's also set to expire on the 16th with you, Mr. Pringle. So one thing we're trying to do is just make sure we can get the board kind of get members back on full terms and get, you know, get us back to full strength so we can continue with this work. So so again, thank you both. We appreciate it. And we'll go ahead and move on to the second point in the agenda, which I skipped previously, waiting for Mr. Henry, is approval of the September 21st, 2022, November 16th, 2022, and February 15th, 2023 meeting minutes.
Move approval.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, the ayes have it. That motion is approved. Moving on to old business. As stated earlier, we are kind of transitioning as far as membership is concerned. I believe Austin is the only member who has a term that lasts past this week or next week. So that being said, I've been serving as chair for over a year now. I know we usually like to do this yearly and kind of get some new officers in place. We have voted on secretary in the past. However, I'm not sure that that role has any necessary function, being that Jeff so kindly takes our minutes and helps us with that. So I think the only two things we need to vote on are chair and vice chair. I know that I've served as chair, obviously. Mr. Henry served as chair. I'm not sure, Ingrid, if you have. Ingrid has as well. So that leaves us with two options, and I'm not sure if either of you would like to serve as chair or vice chair, and, you know, we can take votes on that. So.
Nomination's open.
I'll defer, Mr. Pringle.
Okay, yeah, well, I would run for chair, but according to whatever people desire, but I've been involved in a lot of the different clubs and things for years and years with some of the other clubs in the Safari Club, but I served on the Waterways Commission for 12 years, which you're only supposed to have 6 years. But the city council just kept rolling me over, and I was supposed to expire from after 6 years, but they just kept me on. So I guess I'm served the longest ever on the board. I also serve on the Mayor's Disability Council and involved. I'm the chair of the Adaptive Sports for Jacksonville, so which is a lot of fun getting people off the couch, but we're working. My thing is to have everybody included. I'm an all-inclusive man. I don't make any difference. Like my daddy used to say, whether you're white, black, or grizzly green, it's if you're American, we have the rights to do as we would like to. Kind of the privilege to be the chair or the vice chair, whichever one you request or you vote for. So.
Is there a motion?
I'm nominating Mr. Pringle as chair.
Is there a second? I'll second that. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Okay, so for moving forward, the August 16th, 2023 meeting, and I guess we can just take up down the line when we're going to kind of schedule re-elections or new elections. So next meeting, Mr. Pringle, you'll be our new chair. So
how about the vice chair?
I'll go ahead and nominate Austin Quickle as the vice chair as our second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. Any opposed?
Oh, there wasn't any dirty allegations.
Yeah.
I did a Google search. There's nothing.
So by
a couple of packs.
I commend you both for that clean election. So by voice vote, moving forward, Ray Pringle will be our new chairman, and Austin Quickle will be our new vice chair. So thank you both for volunteering your time and your efforts in serving this panel. Moving on to new business, the declaration of vacant seats. Jeff, I know you emailed about this, and I think this is just regarding Ms. Christman's seat and Mr. McWhite's seat. And essentially, correct me if I'm wrong, we basically just have to vote to declare those seats vacant, correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yes. Quick question. For Nancy's seat, is she a council president appointee, mayoral, or SOE?
Yeah, she's not on the list. I don't recall which one she was.
The only reason why I mention that, I'd be remiss if I didn't, but if you have a chance, Mr. Hogan, it'd be great if you can talk to Linnell in the crowd at some point after the meeting. I know she's placed applications to be on the board through either the mayor's office or council president's office, and she can tell you all of her experiences in terms of her qualifications. But
I'll just add to that as chair. She has been at every meeting. She's, I think she would make a great addition to the panel. So
anyway, I say that to say, because you'll have a, in addition to Mr. Pringle, you'll have a vacancy available. So I just wanted to push that out there.
I think I should at least do that one, but on the white one, leave that open for Jerry, and we'll be happy to share that information with him as it relates to a recommendation.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
She's been here 2 years. Four. She's been here 4 years.
She's coming for four years.
And still has.
Some of us have been pumpkins on the vine waiting for replacements. Like, I'm on an expired term. My term expired technically last year. But a lot of times the appointees don't take advantage of them, and we just kind of like wither on the vine. So whenever we do have someone that actually is interested in serving on a board but doesn't necessarily get attention, we just wanted to make sure that we uplifted them just in case someone may just not be completely aware about their application.
Mr. Clements, I think.
Yes, it'll need to be an appointment.
A reappointment as well?
Yes. Resolutions of reappointment. Mr. Chrisman was a mayor's appointee.
Okay. So that. Mr. Hogan.
Even though I'm a short time, I am still a supervisor until June 3rd.
So, yes, let's do that.
Yes.
I agree.
Not only are you getting someone that's been here 4 years, she's also a poll worker.
Yeah.
Okay.
And good one. So
yeah, and I doubt Mr. Holland will find a better candidate.
I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
So with that, I think we need a voice vote to declare Ms. Chrisman and Mr. McWhite's seats vacant.
Yes, I move to declare Nancy Chrisman,
is that the word?
Chrisman, and Charles McWhite's Duval County Election Advisory Panel seats vacant due to non-attendance.
Second.
Pursuant to Section 50.104 of the Ordinance Code.
Thank you, Jeff.
What Jeff said.
Did I hear a second?
Second.
Those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? And the ayes have it. So that now leaves us with three vacancies. Or two. There's another on the list.
Oh, because we're eligible to have one more? Because it's just a,
yeah, correct. So the SOE seat's always, held by a staff member, and then there's.
Oh, so each one of you get three, the mayor, the council president, and the SOE.
Correct.
Three and three, one of which is SOE, as an SOE staff member.
Thank you for the honor.
I might get replaced.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. Oh, that's what I was looking at here. I know I have served on a partial term in the past, and this is my first full term, so I'm hoping to be reappointed. Austin, your term ends April 16th, 2025, so you have some time. Daniel, you are past your sell date. Your term expired last April, so hopefully you can continue to serve if we do need you. Otherwise...
I guess so. I've been on the board, if you can believe it or not, since 2015. She got me definitely beat, because she's a holdover from Mayor Brown.
Yeah,
she's a charter member.
Her term ended 2016, so according to. So I think everyone else is eligible for reappointment, except Daniel. So if this is in fact your last meeting with the panel, I just want to say, as chair and kind of personally, thank you for your service. You do a great job of keeping these conversations going and coming prepared with questions and insight and doing it in a respectful and constructive manner. So just want to say thank you from the panel, and hopefully you continue to stay involved. Obviously, we have public comment, and I know you are involved in the community and in various endeavors, so hopefully that will continue. So thank you, Daniel. The next item on the agenda. Oh. Well, you, according to this, you have two terms that you're eligible for reappointment, so I'm not sure if that's incorrect or not, but...
No. No, she's served well beyond two full terms now.
Well, then what I said to Daniel, I mean doubly to you, Ms. Montgomery, because you have also been fantastic.
She's the OG of the group.
Yeah, and I remember when I started in 2016, you were here, so...
How long is the term?
It's typically 4-year term, I believe, or is it 3-year term?
Three years.
I've been here 3 years.
According to this, you were appointed on last February, but I think you were filling out a partial term. So your appointment technically ends in 4 days on the 16th.
Because the terms don't follow the person, so when you get appointed into a term that's already existing.
But that, and if my understanding is correct, I was originally appointed to a partial term. I was told you can then serve two full terms if you wish. So I think you can now serve 2 3-year terms, if that is your wish.
I have a question.
Yes.
Can you go like say you're appointed by, like say Mr. Pringle's been appointed by the supervisor?
Mm-hmm. Jeff question, I think.
Well, there's some on the waterways that got reappointed.
Okay.
That's just a curiosity. That's just out of curiosity.
But they have.
Does the code contemplate that?
Because I know when you're running for office, you can't.
Because it's technically not the same seat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but if I was a council member and I served 8 years as a council member for District 5, and then I wanted to run at large,
I would assume that's.
You cannot do that.
I would assume that applies, that the term limits apply.
Stops allowing that. Back in the day, everybody that was on the council with me was agreeing until I was on the front page of the Metro saying that I was trying to break term limits. Everybody that was supporting me flew away. I was the only bird in the pond, so that bill didn't make it. But it makes sense because it's a totally different electorate. And you keep
your, what's the word I want to use?
Institutional knowledge.
Yeah.
When I went on, it was the year of the vote for term limits. And so ten of us that were brand new. And then that's when it started. So when the first two terms came to completion, we left. Out of the 19, 15 left.
Yeah, I remember that.
There was nobody that knew that they had more power than the mayor. And ever since then, the mayor has been stronger. Because
the rest is history on that one. I've always said sometimes council members are like afraid of their own shadow. But
that was a big oops.
But, Jeff, it felt like you were about to say something.
I was just going to say that's an interesting question. I'd have to ask the general counsel's office to opine on that.
So who approves. Mr. Hogan appointed me, so who vets me?
Rules Committee. Rules Committee. Okay.
Because, like, at the waterways, the city council vet.
I had to go before the city council. So I just wondered.
Yep. So all of them are different.
All the appointments are made by the council. Whether by the supervisor, by the mayor, or by the council president, they all get voted on by the council. And
so it all has to go back through
and
the council.
It goes to the committee, and then it goes to the
rules. And you go to the rules committee to be interviewed there, and then they make the recommendation for the
But, but usually, if I remember, Jeff, if you have a certain, I think it's above 80% attendance, you're not required to be.
At 75%. Yeah, if you're a reappointment and your attendance has been good, then you don't need to come back to rules. You're going to be fine. If it's less than 75%, then they want to see you and ask you what's going on. Why haven't you been making the meetings?
I remember when I was originally appointed, I had some of those folks in my session getting pulled in front of council asking why they weren't showing up. Yes.
Yes.
Moving on, EAP work plan for 2023, is that just referring to our report, and just kind of future meetings?
I think at one point towards the end of last year, you talked about, well, what should we do for next year? Should we concentrate on? So
I believe our meetings are set, and, you know, we'll have our report to turn into city council. That's usually around summertime, correct? I know that, you know, my chairmanship has ended, but being that kind of I've been chair the last year, there are kind of some things I'd like to put together for that report with the, you know, board's input, obviously. Because I know in the past we've kind of just done a summary, and I maybe want to expand just a little bit on some of the topics we've been talking about, include our minutes, include our handouts. So our next meeting is in August, so that's something that hopefully we can get together in the interim. But aside from that, unless the panel has anything else, I can't think of any other big action items for this year, or obviously we'll have kind of a review and a rundown of the elections that are taking place in May and August. But aside from that, I can't think of any big items. Okay, well, with that, we'll move on to public comments. We do have a couple members of the public here. I'm not sure if either wish to approach the dais. And absolutely.
Good afternoon. I did not realize you were going to be here this evening, but I'm excited that you are. Very excited that you are. So I wanted to make a comment, and then I have a couple of questions, and I realize this is called public comment, so there's no requirement to answer. But Ms. Wiggins is doing a great job. I know she came out of maternity leave right into election, and I, from a user's perspective as a precinct manager, things went very smooth with the exchange back and forth between the poll workers and her. So I just want to say thank you for what she's doing up there. My question really has to do with the absence of Eric. Eric had given us an opportunity to know when a voter was deceased. It took information in from the Bureau of Vital Statistics, the Social Security Administration, and a number of other organizations, so that a registrant could be removed from the rolls if they were deceased. It also kept people, especially because we experienced a lot of snowbirds here in Florida, kept folks who were registered in another state from being able to cast a vote in the same election in a different state. And I want to know if there's going to be any sort of public education or campaign to reassure the public on how we're going to prevent that type of voter fraud from occurring here in Duval or in the state of Florida, if you know that.
First on the deaths, we get notice from the Bureau of Vital Statistics every month, and we also get information from Social Security, same thing that Eric used. So that's not going to be an issue. The problem with deaths is, I use a story. Mama went to visit her son, her other son, in Wyoming, and she loved it so much she stayed a long time, and she passed away there and died and then was buried in Wyoming. She's still a registered voter in Duval County. We don't know, and the Wyoming Bureau of Vital Statistics is not going to tell us, and typically the family doesn't tell us. So you'll still have that, and you would have that. I don't think Eric would even pick that up because she may not have been a registered voter there. Again, supervisors around the state would say, yes, we'd like to have it, but we're not going to tug on Superman's cape, and there are some things they're doing to help make our rules more accurate. The toughest thing, and Robert will tell you, is that people move away and don't tell us. And we send mail there, and the people that have now occupied that house or apartment, they just throw it away. If they would put return to sender, then we got 2 years, though. It still takes 2 years to pull them off the roll. It's a balancing act. You remove them too quickly, and now you've suppressed somebody from voting, or you take too long and you have bad records. It's a very difficult task. It's still with Eric, it's the same thing. We've gotten even errors from Eric. So it's one of those things that we really can't do anything about.
And as a precinct manager and a voter, I love the express vote. I love the express vote. I hope y'all get more money so you can get more express votes. Do you know if our outreach person at the SOE is taking those out into the schools when they're doing the voter registration education out there so we can go ahead and get the next generation of voter on board with the technology and be more trusting and understanding of it?
What we'll probably do is what we used to do when we were asked to do school elections is we would print their ballots for them and then take them a DS-200. But since the express vote is so easy, it would probably be easier when we do school elections in the future just to take one out there and let them do that. But again, that's another one of those instances where when we're asked, we go. Anybody that asks us, we go, but we can't really insert ourselves. We do go. We do go to every school and local college every year for the voter registration drive, but not necessarily for an election that they have.
Sorry, I'm grabbing some notes there so I know who to follow up with afterwards. You had mentioned previously that for those of us who were experienced poll workers that there might be an opportunity to do online training in the future. Do you know the status of that, and will that save us money as a city?
It won't save the city money, but it'll save you money coming back and forth for poll work for training. Okay. And that is something that we are still, as a matter of fact, with the last session, we had one of the sessions was a new inspector class that was filmed that we're going to offer for them to be able to, for people who are taking the new inspector class, to maybe watch that video. The problem is, the problem is still in the testing, and you might have heard me say, I say this to my managers kind of off the cuff, but it's the truth. The problem is if I'm going to give you an online class and you're going to take an online test, I need to make sure it's you, not your grandson, taking it. And that's the rub. Most of the counties that offer online training do not do testing. We have always provided some sort of assessment for our poll workers. I think that helps. So that's the part that we're still working out. But it's definitely coming. It's definitely coming.
This is my last question, and you may not be able to address this right here, but one of the committee duties, it says to study and make recommendations to the SOE to increase the quality of voter registration and education efforts. So I don't want to get focused on the numbers here, but I'm going to use some numbers. Between, this is from a public records request from the Duval SOE a while back, but between August 2018 and August 2020, there were 7,143 voter registration applications that were initially rejected here. What concerns me is 48% of them were African American and 24% were unknown, so we don't know what their race was. But I had asked Lana one day when I was turning in voter registration applications for an organization that I represent, how would I know if as a 3PVRO, if I were not doing good quality voter registration applications, would somebody at some point see that my organization was turning in ones that were not legible, that were not complete, that had not been signed, or whatever it was? In this case, a majority of them, it seems like the Social Security number was not right, or there were issues with the address, which can be penmanship, or it can be wrong information, intentional or not. Would there be a situation where the SOE might consider doing quality assurance when these are coming from local 3PVROs? Because I think people in good faith are trying to register people to vote, but they don't always know that they're doing poor quality registration so that they can either do better education with their volunteers or at least become aware of the fact that they're not actually registering voters. They're just turning in applications.
Not, you want me to?
Probably, this will probably be a double team, so you go first.
Well, I'll be the bad cop.
Okay.
Because I'm very cynical. I'm just, you know, but just from what I've seen throughout a lifetime of being in this office, a lot of times when those people are approached outside or wherever they're at, they're just going through and they're scribbling it out and here, take this, and you know, that's why there's been more scrutiny on the 3PVROs, because some of them have tried to provide monetary restitution for the number of voter registrations that you turn in, and then you are more concerned about quantity over quality. I know that when we do a voter registration drive, and we have I've probably been in every single school in Duval County at least two or three times. We'll bring a poll worker with us, and after, you know, right there on the site, when the student fills it out, we have another set of eyes look at it and say, okay, I need you to, and that's where I'm amazed as a father of four that so many teenagers do not know their home address. They do not have they have no idea what their Social Security number is, and if they don't have their permit on them, they don't know their driver's license number. So the cynical part of me wants to put that on the person who is actually doing the registration to say, if I am a 3PVRO and I'm taking the accountability of this person's registration, I'm going to look at it right then while the voter's filling it out. Because let's be honest, if I can't read it, if you can't read it, our staff probably can't read it either. So, but there's not a systematic, programmatic way, because once that voter registration is turned in, we're actually kind of, we have to log who it came from, but we're kind of prohibited from segregating them based on who the 3PVRO is. They all go in together. And so if you provided me with one that I couldn't read, or let's say I left off some essential information, that voter's going to get the information. It's not going to come back to you.
First of all, reject is not the term we use, because it's not a reject, it's incomplete. And this happened in a public, what was it? They held a press conference talking about this, and they had gotten the data from us, and we freely gave it to them. It's because it's a public record. And it said that we were rejecting 60% of Black American applications, and they read the column wrong. There's an incomplete column, and there is a reject column. A reject column is someone that's not 18 years old, someone that's not a citizen. Those are very, very few, but the incompletes come from everybody, not only from the the groups that are out there registering, but from individuals. And here's what we do with one that comes in that is incomplete. We take the time to fill in the information on a new form that is clear to us, okay? And we put all that information in there. And then we highlight in yellow where that person didn't give us the right information, didn't give us a driver's license number, or didn't give us, gave us a P.O. box. You can't have a P.O. box. It says that on the form. And so we do all that. Then we send that document to the individual and say, when you send this back to us, we'll complete it and send you your voter information card. So we're not rejecting people. That's incomplete. The data's not there. We can't read it, or they didn't put it there. And so I don't know how we fix that. Some people don't write very well. And like Robert said, there are more and more people that are getting paid by the application. Just
several people going to jail just
a few months ago for doing that very same thing. So it's always going to be a problem. All the the third parties very much, because there are very few that really take the time to make sure they're giving us work that we can work with.
And I apologize. I've got denied on here. I did say rejected. And I imagine everybody here knows, but the majority of all voter registration in Florida takes place on the Department of Safety and Motor Vehicles website. So that, and a lot of that is electronic. It's taking place in the offices. But, yeah, I think so many people think when they give someone an application or they're doing it themselves, they think they're registered to vote once they turn it in, when, in fact, that's just the first step. And a lot of us do try to educate the public on what happens when you turn in a form that can't initially be processed and that person can't be registered. So I just hope at some point y'all will take a look at if there are organizations that are turning in poor quality work, that there might be some way to let them know, because I think people do want to do good voter registration and they're not quite aware. And I'm with you, sir. We've seen people out sweating at parades and their hand is sweaty and they're writing on the form and it's blurring the ink, and writing on tables that are rough texture and there's no clipboard underneath them, and it's just a lot. But I do think that a lot of people want to do quality work. They just don't always know that they're not doing good quality work. So I appreciate you answering my questions. Thank you.
Is there any other public comment? Not requirement. So our one piece of old business, I just going back briefly, I submitted a letter to Jeff regarding our vacancies that, you know, will be forwarded to mayor and city council president. So hopefully that gets us a little traction there. So there's nothing else. Mr. Pringle, yes.
Maybe get a suggestion from Mr. Hogan, maybe of what, how to write these letters to get elected officials to appoint somebody. Is there a buzzword that we can use that maybe will get them to say, okay, we'll get an appointment?
I don't know if there's a magic wand on that.
And
it's up to the individual. And
I think that, for me at least, is the most frustrating part, because based on our previous conversations, I believe these offices are aware of these vacancies and they're kind of regularly updated on boards and commissions. So, like I said, hopefully that'll maybe get us some traction. I tried to be polite and persuasive in my letter. So, you know, hopefully there'll be some action there. So, if there's nothing else, our next meeting is August 16th, 2023, and I will adjourn at 4:45 p.m. Thank you, everyone.